Well, just if you want to know, there'll be more time of song worship towards the end. We're going to use that more as a time to respond to the message as well. So, just people who like to know that. There is a PowerPoint there as well. Just, yeah, grand. You can leave it at that for now. I was just even that worship song there. It was quite interesting. I don't know if you know. There was a real tension there. The verses were questions. How long will we have to wait? How long till our tears will be wiped away? How long will there be justice? How long, God? And yet there's this tension of that, and also at the same time, we know where my Redeemer lives today, and we know. It's a great song. I just saw that tension there. There's a reality to it, and yet we can come and worship that. My name's Scott, anyway, if you didn't catch it those few times. I've been coming to Court Church for about 5 or 6 years, seen all different changes here and there, this is my second or third time speaking. So at the Creative Services, you might know, so over once a month, Rob's been great, and a few other people have given us a chance just to see if we're any good at speaking or not. So we'll see how it goes tonight. But I'm hoping that God's word will come out, and that you'll do me a favour as well and hear God, not me, and that kind of tension as well that's there. I've been given the lovely topic, and I know it's a nice sunny day to talk about sin. There was like a great topic a month ago on trusting God, and I don't know, that just seems a bit more positive or something. So there's kind of, I suppose, like, I'm going to talk about three areas to get you guys thinking. We're going to look at what is sin, what the essence of sin is, and then we're going to look at what the problem is with sin. What is the problem of sin? It's kind of obvious, but we'll just explore the consequences a bit more. And then finally, there'll be the last point, which is bring free from sin. After the second part, we'll have a time of reflection, and there'll be kind of images and stuff so we can dwell, and then we'll come back and try and be a bit more uplifting, if that's okay. What I was thinking with, when I say the word sin, I'm thinking it provokes in all of us lots of different thoughts, different feelings, different emotions. But my heart is really for us to go tonight into the Word of God and find really what the essence of it is. It's not just, you can feel like, you can be two sides. Oh, I don't smoke, I don't drink too much, I'm not sinning, or else I smoke and I drink too much. And I am sinning, but really, they're more symptoms of sin. I really want to go down to the essence of really what it is tonight. So if Marianne could come up, and we're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 2, that is page 756 in the red book. So it's Jeremiah chapter 2. Thanks, Marianne.
The word of the Lord came to me. Go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem. I remember the devotion of your youth, how as a bride you loved me and followed me through the desert, through a land not sown. Israel was holy to the Lord, the first fruits of his harvest. All who devoured her were held guilty, and disaster overtook them, declares the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all you clans of the house of Israel. This is what the Lord says. What fault did your fathers find in me that they strayed so far from me? They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They did not ask, where is the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt and led us through the barren wilderness, through a land of deserts and rifts, a land of drought and darkness, a land where no one travels and no one lives. I brought you into a fertile land to eat its fruit and rich produce. But you came and defiled my land, and you made my inheritance detestable. The priests did not ask, where is the Lord? Those who deal with the law did not know me. The leaders rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal, following worthless idols. Therefore I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord, and I will bring charges against your children's children. Cross over to the coasts of Kittim and look. Send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there has ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glory for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, O heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and they have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water.
Great, and we'll leave it there for now. What I propose, there's just two things what I'm going to say, what the essence of sin are. So the first one is that sin, in its essence, is a rejection of God, and I'll show you that a bit more in Jeremiah 2. And the second thing, that sin is a denial in itself. It's sin in its essence will deny its existence. It will deny its power. It will deny its pure evil. It will deny that. It will dress it up all the time. So these are what I've been thinking in Jeremiah 2. I'm sure there's a few more, but my heart is ready to get down to the essence of both these, of what sin is. And so we'll look into Jeremiah chapter 2 here. Really what the background of this is the first time Jeremiah is speaking to the people here in Israel. And Israel is in a state of real confusion and brokenness politically. They are surrounded by plenty of great world empires that want to pass through Israel. Israel trying to do deals. They're trying to deal with Syria or trying to deal with Egypt. They're going there for their security. Religiously, they're all over the gaff as well. They're like worshipping Baals here, bit of God here. Don't know what's going on. Economically as well, they're just in a mess, and they're blaming God for it as well. So Jeremiah chapter 1 is just basically God commissions Jeremiah, and Jeremiah chapter 2 is, this is what I want you to say. But I really want to get out here, the first point, sin is a rejection of God, that I want to get across, when we think of sin, we sometimes think of it as a moral, we think of it in a moral perspective. Do the right things or do the wrong things, or if I don't do this, which I should do, that's sin, or just simple things. But I really want us to begin to think in our own minds what it really is, the essence of sin. So for me, what we really need to think about here is sin. We need to think about it in a love perspective, that we haven't broken, it's not necessarily broken rules and the rule keeper is annoyed at us. It's rejecting a lover who absolutely loves us, and we reject him. Jeremiah chapter 2, Israel, God's like, look, I've done so much for you. I've done so much for you. Why are you going after these gods? So the second point I want to put down here is in verse, it's hard to find your verses in a different Bible. Verse 13 is really what I want to zoom in on there. My people have committed two sins. They've forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns that are broken. So I want to explore that metaphor. I think that really brings out really what sin is in the rejection sense of rejecting God. So we've got these three pictures. We've got water, which really is a picture all the way through the Bible of life. For practical purposes, Israel would have really known this as being kind of flirting with drought all the time. They really needed water, was essential. Water was essential for survival, but it was also essential for better than survival, life. Like you had just a bit of water just to keep you going, but loads of water so you could wash, so you could feed your animals, so you could have loads and loads of fruit. So water was an essential thing. Jesus, uses water in John chapter 4 with the woman at the well. I'm thirsty. You'll never thirst again with the water I give you. Jesus goes, I give you life and life to the full. So this picture of water is life, living water. So God's like, I'm the one with life. So we look at these things. Cisterns is the one thing and springs is the other thing. So cisterns, what are they? It's a weird word. Never really heard about it. So I looked it up. And basically it's like a water tank. All it does is just hold water. And so it really collects runoff water or predominantly rainwater. So usually what they would have done in Israel, they would have sort of maybe got some good rock, hard rock and dug a hole and then just like wait for rain to come. When the rain comes, they come and take the water from it. But there's problems with that. Like it says here, there's lots of leakages. The water will seep out. You go off for the day, you come back the next day after it's rained, and probably most likely maybe animals have drunk from it. Animals probably peed in it. It's probably quite disgusting. It's not the best way of. So the quality of water is not good, and the quantity of water is not good either. It's unreliable. So in the essence, this picture of cisterns is that people have tried to make their own way in life. Oh, what can I do to get the best of life? So I go here and I dig my cistern. I go for a success. I go for religion. I go for money. And I dig and dig and dig and dig. And then water comes down. I'll get a bit. That's all right. That's disgusting. I'll go again. And it's such a stress of doing this. So that's a cistern for you. And God's saying, you've gone over to here. Springs, on the other hand, they're much better. Springs aren't man-made, they're natural, they just come out, there's nothing you can do, you can tap into it. Springs, it produces its own water. Springs, the quality and the quantity of the water is just so much superior as well. The quantity, it just keeps flowing and flowing and flowing, no problem there, you don't have to do anything with it, just get your water. And the quantity, the quality of water as well is unbelievable. Like, because I was even thinking, like the bottled water we get is essentially spring water. I suspect with River Rock, I reckon that's just drained water from Coke, but I suspect that one. But maybe like Valley Gang water, things like that are better water. And like if you think about that is drinking that compared to like muck water, there's a vast difference. So God is saying like He just doesn't understand this. He's done so much for Israel. He loves them so much, and yet they're going after life in completely the wrong way. Their quality of life is terrible. Their quantity, they can't get good life, and they're forsaking him. So really, this is what I'm trying to get out with the rejection of God, and we're going to look at it more. The second point, which I mentioned, there was the rejection of God, and then also there's, I think the next slide, is sin is denial. And there's an interesting verse which I found. The second verse here, sin is denial. Why rejection? My PowerPoint's helped me. Because I was thinking, why would you reject good stuff for bad stuff? I was thinking, like, why did the people reject God? I propose to you, we'll look into more later on again, but I propose it's more of a subtle thing. But if we read down, verse 19, God's saying here to his people, your wickedness will punish you, your backsliding will rebuke you. It's interesting, God doesn't have to do it. It's your own sin that does it. I know that from experience as well. Consider then and realize how evil and bitter it is for you when you forsake or reject, I like the word reject, but reject the Lord your God and have no awe of him. So I propose that rejecting God, the reason for people rejecting God is because we lose the awe of God. And I was just thinking in my life that when I begin to lose the wonder of God, I begin to lose the worship of God, that other things of life seem nice, seem good. And it's a very subtle thing. It means me spending less time in God's word, less time making that actual step, I'm going to worship God despite my circumstances. And if I do less of that, sin will become more attractive. So we'll move on anyway. We'll just hold that thought with sin is rejection of God. Sin is rejection of God. It's rejecting a God that loves you so much and it just wants you, and you're just like, no, thanks very much. And even like Percy, many of us maybe have gone through rejections, like, and how that feels, even from a small thing, a relationship rejection, a rejection from a girlfriend, boyfriend, rejection from a father, a rejection from work, and how hurtful that is, especially somebody you love, how much more God with his love as well. Second point, sin is denial in its essence. If we read the psalm here, Psalm 36, verse 1 and 2, which is very interesting, it's up on the PowerPoint as well. David is writing this, and it says, an oracle is within my heart concerning the sinfulness of the heart, or the sinfulness of the wicked. So basically, David has got, oracle is like this sort of prophetic inspiration, some deep spiritual insight that he's got about the wickedness of a heart, which is what, great, I want to know about this. So two things, which is what I'm saying. First of all, there's no fear of God, which you've learned that, no awe of God, no fear of God. That leads to fear in the positive sense, in the awe sense. There's none of that, so that leads to rejection of God. And also the second point, for in his own eyes, he flatters himself too much to detect the sin in his light and to hate it. So sin in itself will start to deny it's there. And I was just thinking about this with... there was a quote that I was listening to preaching on this, and it says, it's not being a sinner that is faithful, it's the denial of it. So like, it's not that we're saints who sin, that's not necessarily faithful, it's the denial of it. And it's a great picture of, like, if you think of like a thing like alcoholism, that someone could be drinking away and they'd be losing their loved ones, could be losing their work, losing their life that they wanted, and they have no comprehension that it's a big deal, or they just don't want to do it, and how much that's part. But there's hope in that, because we know from things like AA that people can get over it. But it's very interesting. What's the first thing that, when you're in AA, what you have to say is, like, I'm Scott and I'm an alcoholic. Like, it's this acceptance. Like, obviously, AA have really caught on to this, that if people want to be free from sin, you've got to get to the essence of it. One of the essences is denial, and you've got to get that out and actually start confessing it. So sin isn't necessarily fatal. It's more the denial of it is, because there are cures for it, thankfully, which we will look into later. We deny, as I said before, we also not just deny its presence, we might be the presence there, but we deny its power, its subtlety. So for me as well, like there's times when you flirt with sin, you knowing that if I just do this, it's not too bad, and we don't realize how bad it is as well. We deny its power, we deny its what it is. And I was just thinking, like, well, maybe not too bad. Some people might be feeling that, other people might be feeling like, oh, Scott, you're really depressing me now. But when I was, to make you more depressed, when I was thinking of David and Paul, David in the Old Testament, Paul in the New Testament, great men of God, and both them, like, David, like, pretty much, he slept one of his best mate's wife, and then tried to cover up and then killed him, even though Uriah, which we'll look at later on, he sort of was there from the start, really protected David all the time. Yes, David is a man after God's own heart. So if David, why did David do it? I will go into that. But I bet one of the things is that, like, what would you do if you could do anything? See, David was king. He could do these things. That's why Jesus went down to the heart of matters. When you lusted after a woman, it's adultery. When you want to really angry at someone, it's murder. Because if you were able to do it and get away with it and the consequences weren't there and people thought you were still okay, it's just an interesting thing to think about. What would you do if you could get away completely? No one would know about it. There'd be no consequences. And that's just something to leave with you anyway. And Paul as well, at the end of his life, well, one of his last letters, he said, I'm the chief of all sinners. He's beginning to realize this sort of process that I don't want to deny the sin that's in me. Romans 7 talks about that as well. There's sin in me, and he does not want to deny because he knows that's part of sin, that we need to get away from the denial of it. Okay, so the first point, what is sin? Second point is, what is the problem with sin? If we go down now to chapter 2, verse in Jeremiah, we're back in Jeremiah, verse 23. Marianne didn't read this out. So God's sort of quoting the Israelites here, his people, remember, not other people, these are his people. God's like, how can you say, I'm not defiled, I have not run after the Baals? Baals are like the kind of gods back then. This is a mad picture, and I'll try and see if we can unpack this. He says, see how you behaved in the valley. Consider when you have done what you have done. You are a swift she-camel, you're a female camel, running here and there. A wild donkey accustomed to the desert, sniffing the wind in her craving. In her heat, who can restrain her? Any males that pursue her need not tire themselves at mating time. They will find her. Do not run until your feet are bare and your throat is dry. But you said, it's no use. I love foreign gods, and I must go after them. So what I would like to propose here, with the essence of what God's getting at here in Jeremiah, what is the problem with sin? Is first of all, that it enslaves us. And the second thing, that it leaves us empty. And these are the issues with sin. So the first one, it enslaves us. I think for us, when we start to do things, when we start to reject God, and that comes out in whatever way it comes out in each individual, that there becomes a time when it becomes enslaves us. So like an addiction, a habit that we want to get out of. So at the start we're thinking, this is cool, this is good fun, but it begins to enslave us. And it really, this verse is incredible. You see, God's like, you don't run around. Like this picture of this female donkey in her heat. So she's dying for it in some ways. And she's going around the valleys looking for male donkeys or whatever. But the word there is like craving. She just so wants this. As a sense of us sometimes in our hearts, that like we have that tension at the start, I mentioned the worship song, that we're like, how long do I have to wait? I don't want to wait anymore. Here's a quick fix, because we have this craving, and it just goes after it, and it does it. So then God's like, don't run around like that, come to me, again, he's wooing the back. But look at this, for like an addiction, it just says, in the end of verse 25, but you said, it's no use. I have to go after what I want to go after. I have to do this. I have to see this. I have to think this. It's no use, God. It's just no use. I have this habit all the time. I have this habit and I can't get rid of it. It's no use. Because I love this. I actually love these foreign gods. And I must continue go after them. My whole life must go after them. So that's a major problem with sin. It can look good at the start. It will deny itself. It will slowly draw you away from the awesomeness of God. Slowly make you reject God a bit. And bang, it will put you into a habit that you can't get out of. I must. It's no use, God. It's no use. The second point then, after that, it leaves us empty. Verse 26 to 28, it says... verse 27, I'll start in Jeremiah 2. It says, they say to wood. So wood, you are my father. Bizarre. And to sun, and to a stone, you gave me birth. And then it's kind of strange thing, they've turned their backs to me but not their faces. Wood, I've got nothing against wood, it's very useful, and I've got nothing against stone, and I'm sure God doesn't either. He has got nothing against wood and stone. Wood is a very important commodity, and stone is good. What do we do? Stone's good, I suppose, for throwing into rivers and things. And when wood's good, you throw that in and it floats. So yeah, just things for just lighten the mood here. Sorry, I think the point is here that it's kind of, it leaves us empty because we've gone after good stuff, but we've made them God. So wood is good, but you've made that God. Stone is good, but you've made that God. Money is good; it's very useful, but you've made it a God. Me speaking up here is good, I suppose, but if I really like the buzz of it, if I'm feeling good, I can make this a god. That's a challenge. Like, leading worship could be a good thing, but we can make it a god. Doing sport could be a good thing. See, these are good things, but they're dislocated. It's almost like sin is a dislocation of our soul. It's popped out. It's not right quite well, and it affects everything. And in the end, these things will only leave us empty. In the end, if we make these things the ultimate, it'll leave us empty. I remember hearing, like, if even like good things, I was even thinking of with John Kisson and Zach there up there and Catherine, if they make Zach the thing that they love the most, it won't be good for Zach. They'll probably either go two ways. If they make Zach their kind of God, they will either go and spoil him rotten, and we know that what happens to kids do that, or else they'll be so protective of him, they'll discipline him so much that they'll be like that he'll probably hate them and reject them, and the thing that they love so much, they'll go away and they'll leave them empty. Much better to have our priorities straight. We love God first, and then we love Zach, you know. And by loving God, by accepting God, it keeps that balance right. So a question I propose is that, what are my gods? Misplaced priorities, yeah, leave us in. What are our gods? I think at the end of the day, we all want to worship. It's an inbuilt thing in our genes that we have to worship something. So how can we ourselves figure out, like, what can I worship? And I really think it's, if there's something so much that if you can't live without it, or if you're so afraid of losing it, like your life is, it's like if money is the ultimate. If I lose that, my life's not worth living. Going to church is the ultimate. If I don't do that, my life's not worth living. My children, if my children, like, my life's not worth living. So it's just to think through things. What are the things in our lives that we just have to hold on to, that life's not worth living without them? Like, we could lose things that are very precious and very good, I'm not saying that, but what are the things that we can hold on to, like, to make God God and make everything else in its right priority? So really, with leaving you with these things, sin is a rejection of God, it's a denial, and sin will enslave us, and sin will leave us empty, and sin is a misplaced priority. These things here, free of losing, if I lose this, life's not worth it, it's no use, I love foreign gods, I must go after them. We're going to put on just some images and some music and words that are from Jeremiah 2, and just interact with God, interact with yourself, and then I'll come back on a little bit more of a positive note.